podcast. I'm Kyle, joined by my brother Keenan. Keenan, how are you doing?
I'm getting dragged by my friends because I told them I was going Warriors over Lakers, so I'm okay. They're all coming after me heavily right now. But I'm good. Otherwise, I'm good. Heater killing it, which is balancing out everything. So I'm good.
Yeah, we are recording. It is Tuesday, May 9th. So this is before, what would it be, game five of the Nuggets and Suns, as well as game five of Knicks and Heat. Yep. After the game fours of Warriors Lakers. Every series is game fours. Game fives, actually. Game fives. Do or die game fives.
Well, it's going on game fives, but every series has gone through four.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Which series do you want to start with? We're just doing brief reviews, brief catch-ups. We'll do more in-depth analysis or reviews and, you know, gimmicks this weekend after the series are over. But out of these four series, where do you want to start? What's on your mind?
I got to start with what's most fresh on my mind, which is the Warriors game. Lakers up 3-1. They played well. I can't say they haven't. Anthony Davis finally had back-to-back games where he was useful. Obviously, he's been phenomenal every other game, and then the other games he's been a no-show. He was definitely not a no-show last night, so that's great for him. LeBron was in and out of his bag, kind of coasting through three, and then in the fourth quarter really got into that. LeBron controlled the offense, controlled the pace of the game. Lonnie Walker, 15 in the fourth alone. I mean, he only had 15 on the game. So he was doing that. And Steph played sensational for 47 minutes. The Warriors played decent. Klay didn't play great. Wiggins was Wiggins. Draymond was solid. But Gary Payton, the second, was really good. And then it just got down to last few plays. Steph forced a three over AD after the one-legged 20-footer I'm fine with. That was he could have gotten to the basket, but Anthony Davis has been so rangy that I'm fine with that one. I mean, that ball was in and out, but then that second shot was a little much. He didn't need that. Klay took, I mean, it was at the end of the shot clock-ish. It was like 4 seconds left. He still could have gotten closer. He threw up a bomb that was ill-advised. Draymond threw the ball away. Steph made a layup in that time, but like it just wasn't great. It wasn't a great sequence for them. And then obviously the jump ball, throw the ball over the head. I know you're going to get into that probably heavily. Reminiscent of Giannis, but in a different way. Giannis was just scared to have the ball and made an ill-advised play. Steph was just careless and just forgot he had a timeout and just threw it over his head. But I mean, kudos to the Lakers. My one saving grace for the series, especially for it to go seven, the dog that has been choosing games, he's like 4-0 so far in series. He has the Warriors coming back from 3-1 and 7, which would be a spectacle of all spectacles if Steph got LeBron back for that. But otherwise, the Warriors have got to figure out some things. And I'm going to let you go on before I go into that. I'm going to let you go.
I mean, not really much to say. It's been a weird series. I mean, I think we all thought this was going to be the best series of the second round, and really it turns out that's Phoenix and Denver. That's been the most fun series. Last night was the best game we've gotten out of this series. You know, I thought
That game one was pretty good, too.
Game was pretty good, but I mean, like, especially with AD's performance, but
Game four was definitely the best, but game one was pretty
good. Sure. But all around, like, I think Denver-Phoenix has been our best series of the second round. You know, Heat and Knicks has been decent. Celtics-Sixers has been up and down for sure.
This arguably hasn't even been the second. You could say Celtics-Sixers is right there just because James Harden has been two games of MVP Harden and two games of playoff Harden. He's been 50-50, but, you know, in the two games he's been that he's won, they've won, so it's been interesting, but we'll get into that later.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, stars have been, especially AD and Harden, especially AD in this series, have been up and down. You know, this series, I'll just come out and say it right now. I think the Warriors are going to win game five, push it to a game six, and then whatever happens there happens. I can't imagine they go out in five. Like, I can't even picture it right now. If they do, what changes are going to happen? Like, I really wonder what changes are going to happen in Golden State because, you know, I feel like when it does end for teams like this, or, you know, teams that have their run, that have their stretch, I feel like it never ends well. I feel like it never ends quietly kind of thing, you know, like with Kobe and the Lakers at the end of their run. Yeah. I've told this many times. They were down 3-0 to Dallas the year Dallas wins it all. Nobody even, like, considered them getting swept. And what happens? They get blown out. Bynum gets ejected for a few dirty plays. You know what I mean? Like, it just ended unceremoniously. And I think if it is going to happen that way for the Warriors, that's how it's going to happen. So, I mean, it would make sense for them to go out in five if that's the case. But I personally can't see it. But
I don't know.
I don't know. You know, this last game last night, Steph has probably one of his best all-around games ever. I thought up until midway through the fourth quarter, it was his best all-around game ever. And then, as we said, it ends pretty questionable with his shot selection, with Klay's shot selection. Draymond has that turnover where AD switches to Klay in the corner. Steph just has that brain fart where he does not realize he has a timeout left and just throws the ball away, which is interesting because in the Kings series, he has that one play at the end of a game where he calls a timeout and they have none left. This time, he doesn't even realize they have a timeout. So it's disappointing to see from someone of Steph Curry's caliber.
The only thing I can think of is, the only thing I can think of is really being, like, in a situation like that. It's such a high pressure. Not that he was, like, melting under the pressure in the sense. It's just, like, there's so much going on that in your head you want to get, like, calling a timeout there is more so, like, you just don't want to get tied up again because LeBron's there. You're not going to win that jump ball, so you throw it over. But, again, at the same point, he plus Kerr plus whomever, Draymond, plus everyone else on the floor, the second they see him get that, should all be yelling timeout.
So, and to Kerr's defense,
definitely. You hate to see – it's unexpected to see that from
him. And to Kerr's defense, he said he did call a timeout and that the refs didn't hear him or that Steph got rid of it too quickly. But, I mean, you see so many times at the end of games where two players are going for the ball or two players might even have it wrapped up and everyone's screaming from a timeout on both ends. And the ref will give it, you know, to one of the teams. And this one, nobody seemed to scream for a timeout, apparently, besides Kerr. And, you know, the game ends unceremoniously. Not to mention, they get lucky by getting that jump ball after the Draymond turnover. They tie it up in the corner. Curry apparently comes up with the biggest play of the game, catching that jump ball. You know, he went up and got it. And I'm like, perfect. This sets up for a great ending. And then he just throws it out.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I can't picture them losing a game five. They've gotten nothing out of Jordan Poole this series.
I can't.
Really, largely the playoffs. They really just try to kind of force him in there and have him do his thing. And he really, I don't know, just doesn't really fit what the Warriors do. He had a great postseason last year, and I was still really dubious of the contract they gave him. And this is why, because when he's in there, it really is one man showish. Like, hey, Jordan, do your thing while we do our thing. It just doesn't fit. And I really think his ceiling, I mean, he is a six man, but I can't really see him ever becoming more than a six man. So that's whatever. But
he plays better as a starter. Like, the thing with Jordan Poole is this. I was talking about this. I've talked about it with Trent because someone else at work brought it up to me. It wouldn't be long term. It might not be the best move for them, but short term it would be. If you traded Jordan Clarkson and Kelly Olynyk for Jordan Poole, I think you get a more mature Jordan Poole and Jordan Clarkson who can shoot, can feel it up, but I think he also can play in the confinements of the offense but get his own shot when needed, and you'd get a big in Kelly Olynyk who knows how to play defense but also can stretch the floor from three, so I think that'd be interesting. That is one thing, but I definitely do think Jordan Poole, it reminds me in a different way of Kyle Kuzma. They both won a championship on a team where they were semi-pivotal, but they also are replaceable people who are better in starter roles on not winning-ish teams just because the way they play, like the way Jordan Poole plays is more of like, as you just said, like a me first kind of guy, and that doesn't work in Golden State. So I just feel as if you traded if Jordan Poole was on a team, say like Utah, or was on a younger team to where he would have like the reins, I think you'd see the best of him. But I also don't know if that's conducive to winning championships. So, I mean, he's already won a championship. He's done his thing. He played well throughout those playoffs. So it's not like he's a bad player by any means. It's just that would be kind of where it comes down for me.
Yeah, and I would say Kuzma's a little different because Kuzma is 3-and-D. I think Kuzma could be successful on a good team. We've seen it, like you said, on a championship team.
I think he could now. I think he's grown since he's been in Washington.
Yeah, and
I think Jordan Poole may need to grow somewhere else, but I think Kuzma's now could grow going.
Yeah, and you know very well Jordan Poole could show up tomorrow, drop 25, and be one of the pivotal reasons why they win game five, you know? I don't particularly even think the Lakers have played well. Mm-hmm. Like, last night wasn't a great LeBron game. And then Lonnie Walker, you know, seizes the moment. Shouts to him, props to him, because, you know, that's not a tough spot. You know, he showed all the confidence in the world. Was making pull-up jumper after pull-up jumper, looking like prime Paul Pierce out there or some shit. And, you know, got it done for him. And that's where it hurts if you're Golden State, is you didn't get a great AD game. He wasn't featured very heavily in the second half. Bron has had had an okay series, but he doesn't really force it, that much. I mean, early game two, he was, like, really looking for his jump shot. I don't think he's been terribly aggressive since then. He's definitely, like, playing point guard, but he gives Austin Reeves a lot of rain. He gives D'Angelo a lot of rain. So for the Warriors to lose last night, especially,
I think Steph's been the best player in the series, which you haven't been really able to say much with LeBron ever. So because you're right, LeBron has been, not that LeBron's been bad by any means, because he has not been bad. Anthony Davis has played well for sure. There's obviously game two, he faded completely, but I just think. The way they're playing right now is completely team effort. They got nothing from D'Angelo Russell last game. Austin Reaves, though, came up in a big way. It's going to be interesting to see game five. Like, as we've said a couple times, I cannot see the Warriors losing game five. And then game six, you can?
I can't picture it.
Oh, he's like, I can't picture it either, my bad. So there's game five, and then game six, you're going to need to get into that 20. You got to go back to 2016, go watch game six in OKC. The atmosphere is going to be the same. The environment's going to be the same. The series is kind of playing out the same way that one did in that sense. And obviously, I understand this is LeBron and AD, not KD Westbrook. It's a different kind of animal. But still, game six, Klay's got to come out. And Steph in that game still had 31, 10, and 9. Like, that's what they're going to need in a game six. And all bets are off in a game seven.
They need game two Klay to show up.
I mean, we'll see.
Fuck game six. Yeah. 2016 Klay. You know, they need game two of this series Klay to show up. I felt like they kind of iced him out. He didn't get a lot of shots in the second half yesterday. They ran a lot of high screen and roll. Had Klay just in the corner. You know, to go back to your analysis of Steph on AD, that two shots in one possession, that was such a weird, I feel like that was almost the play that changed the game, other than the Warriors letting the Lakers back in the third quarter. I just thought it was so different from what they were doing. They got the switch on AD. The play before that, Curry gets a layup attacking AD, so I don't see why I didn't just go to the rim. If you get your shot blocked, cool, it's AD.
It was 2016 all over
again. Yeah, they just kind of...
It was his 2016 Game 7 Finals all over again. He didn't drive on Kevin Love. He didn't drive on... And that one might have been because he was injured a little bit. He was a little hampered, and he could have gone past Kevin Love. It had nothing to do with that. This just had... He could have got past Kevin Love too. Like, whatever. But he just settled for... He just settled for a very tough three, which, can he hit it? Yeah, but is that the shot that extremely you can get? Like, shot. No. Like, his shot wasn't falling all game. He his shot wasn't falling on the game, and that's not a bad thing. Like, you're the greatest shooter ever, clearly, still, but that doesn't mean... I mean, you have bad nights. Everybody has bad nights. It's a human game, not a robotic game. So just get to the basket there. You'd been scoring around Anthony Davis and LeBron all second half. And in the beginning of the fourth quarter, too, you were doing the same thing. Just continuously get to the basket. And if you miss a 15-foot floater, I feel more comfortable with that. Or like a tough contested layup, I feel more comfortable with that right now than the 31-foot sidestep back three over AD. That, again, the one-legged shot I'm not mad at. But once Draymond gets that rebound and kicks it out, come have Draymond set a pick for you. Run your pick and roll action. You're either going to get an open shot in the corner or you're going to get a defender on your hip. But again, hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, I didn't like any of their fourth quarter execution. Those two threes by Clay were terrible. Even the one in the corner, that was a lot closer. You know, it was just way too early in the shot clock. Steve Kerr didn't seem to like it at all. He seemed to have a reaction to it. I don't know. I want to see the series go seven. I want to see damn near every series go seven. I think they win in five. They're gonna.
And I still think it can, though.
It can. It can. It's not likely. It's not likely. But they're going to be the desperate team.
It's not likely.
They're going to be the desperate team in game five. They're going to come out with their absolute best and most desperate effort. The refs are going to give them calls. The crowd's going to be going insane. Like, they're going to have the chances, and they got to take advantage of it. If that's the case, if they take care of business in game five, it's going to reverse the other way. Game six, the Lakers are going to be the desperate team. That crowd's going to be going fucking insane. Mm-hmm. They're going to be looking for blood. And, you know, the Warriors are going to have to combat that. And that's where you do need, whether it's another Kevon Looney performance, whether, like you said, you know, you compared it to the Clay game six, they need something like that where it's a different guy that's not Steph, that's not, or could be Draymond, but someone's going to have a, like, banner game that night to at least stop whatever Bron and AD are going to do. Because while Bron and AD might come out firing in game while Bron and AD might come out firing in game five, much like we've seen this postseason, they're going to pace themselves. So if they see themselves down 15 in the first half, yeah, they'll try to catch up. But if it's still, like, if the Warriors still just keep that energy up, the Lakers will be like, all right, we're going to see it in game six. We've seen that from them. Everything's about pacing themselves because of their
100%. They did it in Memphis game five.
And they're going to try a little harder. You know, they knew they could take care of Memphis whenever. But if game five, for whatever reason, gets a little out of hand, you know, I think we'll see them take off the gas a little bit and then save it for game six. And that'll be an even tougher game if we get to that point.
I understand. Jordan Poole, you need to play early. Here's what I would do personally if I'm Steve Kerr. I liked the starting of Gary Payton. He played well. Even though he threw up in his mouth, that was hilarious, and just left the court. But
I missed that. He puked in his mouth.
Here's what I would personally do. I would start...
He puked in his mouth?
Yeah, so on the defensive... Like, they showed a video of it. There's the defensive possession there. You could kind of see his, like, neck kind of go like this, and, like, it threw up... That's what the report said. He threw up in his mouth, and then he instantly went to the locker room. He didn't go back on the offensive possession, and if you remember... Draymond got the ball and then swung it to the Lakers bench and just threw it out of bounds. That was because Gary Payton was supposed to be there, but they only had four players on offense because Gary Payton was in the locker room.
Interesting. Was this the first half? I must have missed this.
I don't know. It was weird. Whatever. It was in the first half. It was like midway through the first quarter, the first quarter. But yeah, you can look it up. Draymond just threw it to the assistant coach on the bench and... is because Gary Payton was supposed to be in the corner, but he wasn't in the corner because he went back to the locker room. I believe they said he threw up in his mouth. Whatever he did, he went back to the locker room and then came on the floor. He was ready after. So, but what I would do, obviously, I am not an NBA coach. This is just me from what I'm seeing. What you're missing, Jordan Poole's offense a bit. He's just not been playing like that, and obviously he. And you're missing Gary Payne's. You have Dante DiVincenzo. I'd be playing him 30 minutes, 25 to 30 minutes in game five and game six. He can shoot. He can finish around the basket. He has that athleticism of Gary Payton, but Gary Payton doesn't have the shot he does. And he can play defense, but offensively, he can put the ball on the floor. He can get to the basket. He's not as quick, obviously, as Jordan Poole and not as electric as him, but I think he is a mash of Gary Payton II and Jordan Poole, and I think that if you put him instead of Moses Moody, especially DiVincenzo's been a champion. He's been in playoff games. I do think that you'd be able to find something there. I would think Dante DiVincenzo would be a great idea for Steve Kerr to play him at least 20 to 25 minutes. I also think he needs to get Looney in the game a little bit more. I understand it's hard to play him and Draymond because they both can't shoot. But regardless, I would try to stagger the minutes as much as you possibly can because Looney is an offensive rebounding monster in the Kings game, Kings series. He really was like one of the reasons.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
But I would just try to find Looney more minutes and get Dante DiVincenzo more minutes. And almost render Jordan Poole useless.
I'm surprised we haven't seen more Kevon Looney. DiVincenzo, yeah. I mean, he does have a ring. He had a torn ACL. He was out for a lot of that season or the second half of that season for a torn ACL.
Yeah, he was. But I was going to say, he's played in the playoffs, so he's been some runs. More so.
Kerr did play him in Payton the majority last night over Poole. I think Poole had 0 points, if not like 3 points. DiVincenzo had 10. Payton had 15. And he closes with Moody. And I thought Moody did okay. Moody actually made a big play on the one Clay 3 did have in the second half. That Clay did make.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lob and he kicked it out to Wiggins. And then Clay got the 3. That was a great play. Moody held his own. I am surprised they didn't play DiVincenzo.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if I would call DiVincenzo a mash of Jordan Poole. I don't think he's got any Jordan Poole in this game. He's more 3-and-D-ish, but DiVincenzo.
No. I didn't mean him. He's Jordan Poole. I meant, he has more of an offensive presence than Gary Payton II. I was going to say, he is a 3-and-D guy, but he can get to the basket. He can't finish athletically around the basket. I literally just meant you have Jordan Poole for offense. You have Gary Payton for defense. He's a mash of both because he can do a little bit of both. Because he's not as good as a defender as Gary Payton. He's not as good as offensive player as Jordan Poole. That's what I meant. I didn't mean he's like Jordan Poole.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised because I go onto Twitter yesterday and Warriors fans seem to really dislike DiVincenzo in this series. And I agree with you. I'd rather play DiVincenzo than probably Poole or Moody. And everyone seems to think he can't shoot and he can't, which I get. He's not a great shooter, but he can knock down open threes. So, yeah, I agree with you. He's kind of tough in the matchup. I'd like to see more of him and Looney. And it seems like Kerr went to them, especially DiVincenzo and Payton last night. Not so much Looney, but, ended with Moody, which, again, he played okay. But it is interesting to see that Moody's and Kerr's crunch time five, like the five he's going to go down with. So I wonder if that's the case in tomorrow's game. Let's move on to Miami and the Knicks before we get to the two games tonight. Heat are taking care of business. Yeah. Would not be surprised to see them win it in five at all. They're kind of dominating the series. They're the smarter, tougher team. They're moving the ball well. Jimmy Butler is completely healed from his ankle, apparently, after all the way twisting it. I think my gut feeling is that the Knicks kind of go three crazy and do get one in the Garden and that Miami wins it in six, but would not be the least shocked to see them win it in five either. So that's my prediction. I think Julius Randle goes off. I think Jalen Brunson has his best game of the series possibly. And they finally have another nice team win. Julius Randle has not played well this series. Brunson's been kind of up and down. They're getting in his jersey whenever they can. Again, the Heat are doing what the Heat do, which is making teams play their style, making teams play their pace. Miami, despite them not really having a home court advantage compared to other teams in the playoffs, it seems to be a tough place to play for teams. Miami plays really well there. They play with energy there.
Yeah.
Again, I think the Knicks, just my gut feeling, I think they're due for a game where they do play very well. But in general, I think Miami is the much better team. That's even without Tyler Hero. They've found their stride for
sure. I agree.
And I love the energy and effort and the way Kyle Lowry's playing for them. He looks like a completely different player from the regular season.
Yes. So, here's the thing. Interesting enough. I think the Heat are the better team. I do. If the Heat have a chance to go to the finals this year, I mean, obviously, if you're in the conference finals, you have a chance to go to the finals, and I think they're getting to the conference finals. But I say that because this is the BAM. This last game, that's the BAM we need. That's the 23-13. Like, that is the BAM that he needs to be. He was aggressive offensively. He has a post hook. He has a mid-range jump shot that's decent. Like, he should be doing that night in and night out because he has the capability of doing so. He's being decisive. Jimmy is Jimmy.
He's being decisive. What? He's being quick with his decisions.
Yes, he's being absolutely. He's being decisive. He's getting the ball, and he's like, okay, I don't need to think, oh, should Jimmy get the ball here? Do I have to dish it out? He's getting the ball. He's like, okay, I'm 16 out. I got the matchup I want. I'm going to go. And so he's been playing very that. I love that from him. They didn't even get a good Gabe Vincent game last game. Kyle Lowry's turned back the clock. I love that. And the best thing for them is Tyler Hero's timetable was about 4 weeks. If they go to game six, Philly and Boston go to game six or seven, I mean, they'll at least go to game six, rather. If they go to game seven, Tyler Hero could be back for the start of the conference finals, if not, like, game two or three of it, which would be a huge boost for them. Because, obviously, he's a shooter. Obviously, he can keep his legs and body a little bit in shape because of the fact that he's just his hand, but at the same time, it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment trying to flick that wrist again. So the Heat are in a great position. I honestly think they close it in game five. I just think the Knicks are not. They're a good team. They have a good base. This is a good season for them. It was kind of like in a different way because, like, Kansas City's different, but kind of like how Jacksonville season was last year. They showed up. They had a really good year. They won their first playoff game comparatively to the series for the Knicks. And then they just lost. They fought hard, but they just lost. I think that's what's going to happen here with Miami, the veteran team, and they move on. Not much else to say other than that.
Yeah. Disagree with the Jacksonville analogy only because they definitely could have won that game. And I guess I kind of agree because, you know, this was a winnable series for the Knicks, but the Heat kind of just seized the moment with this one.
I just meant team-wise rather than, like, the game itself. I just meant, like, Jacksonville as a team or, like, going to the playoffs, winning a playoff game comparatively to winning a playoff series was a great step for them. Next year they'll be able to maybe get pieces and they'll – being a playoff team who can contend to get to the second round and further should now be in their future every year for the next few. That's just what I meant for them.
I feel you. And the Knicks really should be in this series, like, those are winnable games. They just haven't matched the Heat's intensity. Like, at least Julius Randle hasn't. Brunson's been pretty good. Like, he started the series better.
Yeah.
Definitely need more from Randle.
Barrett's been solid.
You know, their bench has been pretty hit or miss. And their bigs have been pretty hit or miss as far as rebounding. Bam seems to be owning the boards right now.
Yeah.
And Zeller, which is weird. So they're just playing tougher. Which you thought it was going to be kind of a match made in heaven, this matchup being, you know, with Tibbs as the coach and then Spoelstra on the other side. You figured it would be two tough teams, but the Heat are really just out-toughing the Knicks right now. But it would be hard for me to see, much like the Warriors, it would be hard for me to see the Knicks really go down sad at the Garden. I think best effort. I think you'll get their best effort defensively. Randall's been so up and down, and he's been a little injured too. He's got his ankle issue, but man, they need some sort of burst from him to even have a chance. Otherwise, Miami's just gonna, you know, go for the kill, especially Jimmy. He's probably gonna go for like 45 or some shit. But you know what? Jalen Brunson, he's a great postseason performer. He'll be ready. The defense will be a little better. You know, same thing like I mentioned with the Warriors earlier. The Knicks will get a few calls here and there. They just got to take advantage of all that. But it's a good series. I thought it would be a longer series.
Yeah.
I think it still does probably potentially go to six. But I was expecting a little more competitiveness out of this series. Excuse me.
I was too. The Heat are just showing to be a little better than
And Hero, they said Hero's timeline would be
They're playing harder.
They said Tyler Hero's timeline would be the NBA Finals. So I don't see him coming back. If he came back for the conference finals, I would imagine it'd be the late conference finals because it's still only been It's been about 3 weeks right now.
I was reading it now. He said if Hero's because it's a 4 to 6 week timeline. So he said if Hero is able to return closer to the 4 week, it'd be available around May 15th. Which would be if it was game set. So like if
this weekend
the Sixers go to game seven with the Celtics, it would be this weekend. It just I haven't gotten an update on like how that was, like how he's going along, but that was from April 30th. So it just depends if he's closer to that 4 week or if it's 6 week. Because if it's at 6 week, then it would be the NBA Finals. It just really depends how he's healing.
All right, what game you want to talk about, or what series you want to talk about now? Phoenix, Denver, Celtics, Sixers, which one?
I'm going to go Celtics, Sixers now. I want to end with talking about the greatness of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and Nikola Jokic. James Harden played, again, he's played two of like the three best games I've ever seen from him in the last week and a half. Everything that they needed in game four, he gave them. The one thing I do want to point out from the Sixers side was PJ Tucker getting in Embiid's ear, because Embiid seemed timid. Not like he was like the moment was too big for him. It just seems like he wasn't trying to take the moment and seize it. And so it was like he was just kind of being passive. Like he was when he was posting up, he wasn't looking to score. He was trying to move the ball too much when he had matchups that he's been abusing all series and game. It's just it was a little odd to see Embiid in that sense. But I mean, made the pass out to Harden in the corner. Harden made a huge shot. The series is now 2-2. It's great for Philly. Boston does its Boston thing where it kind of just can fade at times. Tatum had a Tatum game, it felt like, where he was a no-show, but then can turn it on at any point and become the best player on the floor. Yeah, it was the series is going semi how I thought it would. I wouldn't have been shocked if Boston went up 3-1 just because I didn't trust Harden, but Harden is I can't say anything else, but Harden in the two games that they've won has been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, specifically game four, Harden, that was the best game. Wasn't necessarily the best game I've seen him play, but yeah. He made every single big bucket down the stretch that they needed. He was getting rebounds that they needed. He was making every damn play that they needed.
Yep.
Because you're right. No, you sold it short. Joel Embiid was timid. He was absolutely timid. He got his shot blocked by Horford a couple times down the stretch, and that was in his head. He would pump fake everything.
Yeah.
With short-arming stuff at the rim, like up until P.J. Tucker yelled in his ear, P.J. Tucker made the play of the game right there when he got that and one basket, because otherwise your season's probably over. Then he gets in Embiid's ear, and Embiid kind of turns it around after that, especially in OT. Seemed a little more decisive with his moves and his ability to get to the rim. He wasn't thinking.
That's where veteran presence comes into play.
Right, right, where championship presence comes into play, because, yeah, that's leadership right there. Because Embiid was very much looking very Giannis Antetokounmpo in game five is what he was looking like. He was a little more decisive. Harden was making big mid-range buckets. He makes that big three at the end. Tough three, too, because Jalen got a good closeout. Jalen probably should not have came off him, but got a good contest anyway. Harden makes the biggest shot of his career, and now it's a best of three. Boston's going to go up and down. Look, I can't get on Coach Bud for the two timeouts and not get on Joe Mazzulla, because he did the same shit. Keeps two timeouts in his pocket in OT. I'm fine with the one at the end of regulation where he's got one timeout, but he's got two timeouts. Tatum decides to go with 5 seconds left from like 35 feet out. Just call a timeout. There was nothing good that came out of that, you know? Marcus Smart makes it, but he's a half second late because Tatum goes so late in the clock to get to the rim. So Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't... Nothing about this Celtics team screams championship team to me. But every team that's left in these playoffs is so flawed, you could tell me damn near anything. I think they're definitely deeper than Philly. Philly tried very hard.
Yes.
Again, with the exception of Tucker and Harden, they tried very hard to lose that game. You know, they're up double digits most of the second half. Tatum's not having a great game. Turns it back up in the second half. Rebounded the hell out of the ball, which I love. You know, he gets 18 rebounds, mm-hmm. none in overtime. But, you know, you see that a lot with wings in the playoffs. You see it with Bron, Kobe, Jordan, any major wing you can think of, Dwayne Wade, where Durant even. Like, you see games like this where their rebounding just goes up, you know, and I love that when you see that from a two guard, a three.
Even Steph. Steph
even, yeah. I love when you see big...
Steph's had some 15 rebounds game. He had 10 the other night.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of games like that where guys who you might see with 5, 6, 7, 8 rebounds a game go, you know, 12 and up. So I thought that was some grown man shit.
They want to just go get the ball and go on, yeah.
And,
yeah.
I don't know, I'd like to see Jalen featured more prominently. I think Marcus Smart and Brogdon and Derek White seem to get more shots than him down the stretch. I don't know. You really never know with these two teams. I think tonight will be a great game.
Jaylen Brown's one of the most unique things, honestly, for me. He is so... Like, Jaylen Brown is... He happened in the finals last year, happens throughout all playoffs. He has these 4 to 7 minute game stretches where he is the best player on the floor. He's scoring, he's playing down, like... Not that he's, like, ever really bad, but especially offensively. He has these just stretches of brilliance and then will be a no-show for, like, 20 minutes of game time. And then will show up again for, like, 3 straight minutes. It's so odd.
I don't see that. I don't see...
I never understand.
I don't see no-show from Jaylen. I don't see that from him. What I see is...
I don't mean no show. I just mean non-existent.
Yeah, I don't see.
I guess like it's just he's just not a part of the offense or something.
I don't see that from him as much as I see like when it gets to 4 minutes left in the game, where it seems to be a lot of Tatum, a lot of Marcus Smart, even more Horford than Jaylen Brown, where he doesn't seem featured in the offense in general through 4 quarters of the game. Jaylen gets his touches. He doesn't have the Jeff Green syndrome where. Oh, Jalen's got 8 here, then we don't hear from him the rest of the game, or how Wiggins used to be. I don't see that from Jalen at all. What I see is, you know, 42 minutes of the game, Jalen's getting his shots, all this. And if he's going, yeah, we're going to get him the ball. But in general, it just seems to be a lot of Tatum running point forward at the end, and then it gets more Horford. Marcus Smart's getting more touches than Jalen. That's the stuff that I'm concerned about, because if you got Jalen spotting up for that 3 from the elbow, that Marcus Smart's taken at the end of regulation and at the end of overtime, I feel much better about that shot going in. You know, Jaylen Brown is low-key one of the better spot-up shooters in the league. So that's what – I just don't understand why he doesn't get those mm-hmm. kind of touches. I feel like we see Marcus Smart, Tatum himself trying to force. They'll always go 1-4 high with him, and he's either getting a screen or getting an ISO. I feel like we get him and then Marcus Smart as an outlet much more, and I'd rather see JB be the outlet for that. On Philly side, Embiid's playing okay. You know, game 2 was a tune-up game for him. Game 3 was better. Game 4 was shaky-ish, but good enough, you know. Harden completely no-showed in games 2 and 3. And as you said, 1 and 4 were 2 of the best games he's played. What Harden do we see in game 5 on the road? I personally think the Celtics win it tonight. And then, you know, Philly's backs will be against the wall again in game 6. And we'll have to do the whole... you know, what we saw in game 4 all over again. That's personally what I believe is going to happen. You just never know with these two teams. You really don't. Boston's got much more talent. I think Doc's done okay coaching-wise with the Sixers team, putting them in positions. I think Embiid will eat. Well, you know, what will tonight be a physical game? Will tonight be more of a open game? If it's physical, I think that kind of benefits Philly. But if Boston can just,
I think game six is going to be a dogfight, and I feel like Boston feels urgent now. I think Boston wins game 5 just because they feel when they play urgent basketball and they play like, oh, there's something on the line here. We can't go down 3-2. They ended up playing very well, but I could, not that they'll play lax in game six, but they might have a couple stretches of like, we have game seven in our back pocket. I don't know. That just seems how they are sometimes. But I think game six will be super physical. I think game five, Boston's going to have control throughout the entirety of it. It won't be a blowout by any means, in my personal opinion, but it'll be a game where, as a Celtics fan, you're not going to be worried too much throughout the game. That's how I think.
All depends. All depends on what James Harden we get. All depends on the pace the Celtics play with.
Yeah, true.
If the Celtics can play with pace, they could blow the Sixers off the court in games five and six, but we haven't seen them play fast enough. So, you know, if it's a physical game and Harden's making shots, life could be tough for Boston. I see them winning tonight. I see them putting the pressure back on Philly. And, you know, we'll see what Philly's made of once again, because it's one thing to do it facing 3-1. It's another thing to do it facing elimination. Again, Embiid's playoff history has been pretty shaky, as well as Harden. We've talked about Harden plenty of times, but we've seen it from Harden so far in two games we haven't. So what will we see from him tonight? I imagine Embiid will bring it tonight. I imagine he will be playing a little more carefree than he was down the stretch in game four. So I think we get a big Embiid game. What will we get from the Boston top seven? I will say Boston seems to be able to get whatever they want in crunch time, when they can go five out and, you know, run pick and roll with whoever and just swing the ball. You know, it looks reminiscent of the old Golden State offense when you had to be aware of all five players on the floor. So,
yeah,
they got an advantage there. Philly's definitely much easier to guard when you know, can really just key in on Harden and Embiid. But we'll see. I believe tonight's a close game. I believe tonight's a tough game. I believe Boston wins it. I also believe if they just turn up the pace, they can get Philly the fuck out of here. So let's move on to the next series, though.
I have a quick question for you about this one, though. I'm kind of moving forward. As a Celtics fan, say they win this series, fine. Do you feel comfortable and confident against the Heat, or are you worried?
Comfortable and confident against any team.
Doesn't have to be a long answer.
With this Celtics team. Especially the Heat. The Heat.
Okay.
The Heat are the tougher, smarter.
That's all I wanted to know.
I just think the Heat are the tougher, smarter team. One of the tougher, smarter teams left in the playoffs, period, on either conference. So, no, I wouldn't feel comfortable playing them, given how Boston has a tendency to just take the foot off the gas. You can't do that against the Heat. So,
I was just curious, because last year at this time in that series, conference finals, Boston, Miami, you were more confident.
Yeah, I doubted.
It's going to be a tough series. Miami's physical. They're very gritty. But you're like they'll be.
I doubted
we'll be
the
fine.
Heat the entire way, and that was up until Jimmy Butler was pulling up from three somehow with a chance to go to the finals last. Like, I doubted them the entire way. Whereas this year, I thought they were going to be tough. Yep. I didn't think they were going to make the conference finals as an A seed. But you know, now how can you not believe in them? You could put anyone there, and they seem to be able to make a deep playoff run. So. Yeah, no, can't sleep on the Heat at all.
Yep. I was just curious. But we can move on to this ratings and basketball bonanza of a series that we have in Phoenix and Denver going to Game 5. It has been absolutely incredible to see a lot of... Devin Booker is on a level by himself right now. And that's including anybody else in the playoffs. Like, he's by himself. I've never seen someone this efficient. He's shooting 62% from the floor, 51 from three, 87 from the line, taking 23 shots a game, putting up 37, 5, and 7. Which is incredible. He's been doing that. He's overshadowed what Kevin Durant's been doing, and Kevin Durant's been good. He's been not as efficient as he normally is for some of these games, but he's still been very good. And then those two overshadowed Jokic, thinking he was, as you said, prime bird with his 53-4-11 last game. 53-4-11 last game. 20-30 from the floor. He has the fourth most points ever in a playoff loss. So, I mean, this series has been great. I didn't think that Phoenix would get to this point. They needed one more guy, and Landry Shamet, game four, was that guy. They've gotten some bench help, which is really all they've needed, because Booker and Durant over like the last two games have put up somewhere around 160 points. So, I mean, if you're going to have your best players putting up 80 per game, you're going to have a really good chance of winning those games. So we'll see if they can do it for two more games, because that's what they're going to need to beat this very good Denver team.
Yeah, I believe Chris Paul will be out tonight and then has a possibility of coming back for game six. When I saw that he would be out for games...
Be huge if he comes back game six.
When I saw he was going to be out for the next three games at the end of game two, I thought they were getting swept. I really did. Thought game three would be their best.
I didn't think Chris Paul was playing another game in the series.
I thought game three would be their best chance to stay in the series. And even if they won that game, I was like, all right, Denver will still probably take care of business. Like, I would imagine they'd be much easier to guard. Game three, it's excusable, I guess. You know, they score 86 points combined in game three, Durant and Booker. So, which apparently is like the... It's like the third most ever by a duo, or tied for third most ever, something like that. So whatever, you get a historic performance out of those two. To me, you would figure, and you know, props to Monty Williams for putting a shooter like Shamet in. Not that he's necessarily done great. You know, he's been very hit or miss over the past few years, you know, in that spot up shooter role, even though that's his role. So, you know, like you said, it took him and Terrence Ross, TJ Warren, they've been making big shots. Really took that, but you would again think it'd be a little easier, like if Durant's got the ball, to kind of key in on him and force it to anybody else but Booker, and it still came back to bite them. They were playing a little bit of a zone, the Nuggets were. Jokic and Booker, those two have been phenomenal. Like Durant's shot making, obviously, too, but just to focus on those two, you know, Jokic in game three goes for 30, 17, and 17, and then the next game. Goes, okay, saw an all-around effort. I'm just going to be fucking Shaq this game, be what Embiid should be in the Sixers series, right? And just, as I've said before, it's completely unguardable when he wants to be. When he just wants to be a scorer, he can do that. When he wants to be a point guard, he can do that. If he wants to, you know, do all three phases, rebounding, playmaking, and scoring, he can do that, as he saw in game three. He was absolutely unguardable. He had everything going, whether it was mid-range, everything around the basket. He was just too strong for everybody. And then on the other side, like we said about Booker, holy shit, like he's just been in another fucking zone. Like it does not matter who's guarding him. It does not matter what the defense throws at him. He's got every shot in his arsenal, every single shot. He's not the most athletic to guard either. Like he's athletic enough, but it's not like he's Kobe or MJ out there. Like he's just really got everything in his bag, if we want to call it that. And you know, it's the reason why I was so big on him as a 19-year-old rookie. Like he had all the tools even then. You know what I mean? And he's only built upon it, and you know, but for him to go to this level, which is on some Kobe and MJ shit, is insane. Like on some Durant shit too. Like he's overshadowing Durant, who's on his team, who I would say in general is the better player. And now Booker looks like the number one, and not 1A, 1B. He looks like the number one right now, averaging 37. Like every time he shoots.
And I think they can win like that.
Maybe. I still see Denver.
Like I mentally thought that if they were going to win, it was going to be Kevin Durant being like the guy with Devin Booker coming along. With Kevin Durant's personality, not that he's like a passive guy, but for them until those like last 2 years ish, really the last year in Golden State when he in that playoff run where he really was starting to just be like, okay, give me the ball and kind of go. He's always been a guy who has been fine with someone else doing so. Like with Westbrook, he was fine with Westbrook even taking more shots than him, kind of controlling. He was fine with Steph. He wanted to go in that offense where it was an equal opportunity offense. He was fine with Kyrie doing those things, James Harden when he was there, and now Devin Booker. So Kevin Durant feels like he can mend himself to be a number one. Like if I have to be this guy, I can go get you 48, 17, and 10 like he did against Milwaukee a couple years back. But also being like not a second fiddle, but like the secondary, primary scorer, or secondary scorer essentially. So I think that they can win. As long as Devin Booker's playing like at this level, that can work. It's just if can he keep this level up, because this level, as you said, I wouldn't even say just because of the efficiency, I wouldn't even say Kobe. It's Mike. It's Mike. It's Kevin Durant.
Kawhi.
It's Bird, kind of like efficiency with the scoring. Like, that's where he is right now.
You're correct. Yeah, I think Booker can keep it up without a doubt. Like, I don't see any sign of him cooling off, any sign of him scoring below 30 points. I don't think the Suns can win. I think the Nuggets win tonight. I'd have a hard time. I want it to go too. Seven, but I really do have a hard time seeing it go seven too. Just because, you know, the Suns really do have to pull it out with these players, just mixing up the rotations and seeing who 5, 6, and 7 are, or really in their case 5 and 6, like who can just at least just hold the fort down before Chris Paul gets back, or, you know, they've gotten nothing from Ayton. If you could confidently say that, okay, the third guy's Ayton, he's getting him a double-double, then you got production there, then you only need 2 or 3 threes here and there from Shamit, from TJ Warren, from whoever you got in there, you know? But as long as Durant and Booker can keep scoring, you know, 32 points and up, and, you know, doing everything for them, it's going to give the Nuggets everything they can handle. And, you know, really, they got to keep pace with Denver, because Denver's going to get whatever they want on offense at any time. It's never a struggle for them. So, I don't know. I think at some point they will clamp down on at least one of them, you know, at least make it life difficult for one of them. But if not, this series should go seven. But then again, you know what? They got not shit from Ayton.
Right now, how it's feeling, it feels like seven.
I mean, it feels that way.
I didn't think it was going to. I thought it was going to be five. But it's feel. I mean, and obviously it can change at any point. And I think if it was to go six, it would be Denver in for sure. But it feels like it can go seven, because it just feels like Kevin Durant's going to have one of those games.
Which he might.
Just like at some point, it just feels like Durant's due for like that game. And because he hasn't had that yet. He's been playing great, but he hasn't that.
He very well might, but, you know, all it takes is Durant and Booker can have two of those games. And if, you know, if Ayton's doing nothing and your other guys aren't making their wide open threes, it won't even matter. You're still going to end up losing by 6 to Denver, because they're just going to not struggle. Whether it's Murray, whether it's Porter, whether it's Yo, they're just never going to struggle. So I don't know. I'm really interested to see how Phoenix looks on the road in a tough place to play in a do or die game 5. And, you know, it's a best of 3. I heavily favor Denver. I really do. I just can't imagine them losing just because of Phoenix's depth. But, you know, they've gotten it to work for them the last 2 games.
I think
much like the Celtics and Sixers game, I think Denver just takes care of business tonight, and then we'll see what Devin Booker really is made of. You know, will he go for 55 in a closeout game 6 game, back against the wall game? We'll see. And, you know, the fact that we are 4 games of do or die game 5s, I love it, because we get to see what these teams are made of. What are the Knicks made of? Can they force it to 6? Can Phoenix take control on the road? Is the Warriors dynasty over? The Celtics and Sixers. I just don't.
The Warner Brothers podcast dynasty is raining heavy, but the Warriors dynasty may be over.
And then, like I said, the Celtics and Sixers. You could tell me any outcome of that series, and I'd fucking believe it. So, yeah, I can't wait. This has been the closest to an NFL postseason we've had, where I'm like, maybe since the bubble, where you're like, I genuinely just don't know what's going to happen here. I guess we've had a few postseasons like that, but to get this deep and really not
I think the bubble's underrated and undervalued.
Meaning? What do you mean by that?
Sorry, go on with what you're saying.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Underrated and undervalued?
I think that whenever people talk about it, they always like the bubble championship, like they put an asterisk on it, like it was not a regular, because it wasn't a regular NBA finals, but like at the same time, LeBron still like won his 4th ring. That's still a ring, obviously. And the fact that it was just nonstop basketball, like in the span, like it was just a great thing to watch. They had the play-in kind of like 8-game sample size, which is really where Phoenix beat like birthed themselves because they went 8-0, but they didn't make it in. But we saw a huge level of basketball in an AAU kind of setting, as we've said. But that's kind of where almost your best style of basketball comes from. It's free flowing, it's fun, it's fast breaks. But it's also good ball movement. But you know, you also have people taking over. And I feel like the bubble, it's like almost it's put in its own category, and I don't feel like it's appreciated enough because I feel like we got superb basketball throughout that entire bubble, but it doesn't get talked about like it was.
I think what it is the level of play some of these players are playing at and the level of shooting that we saw. Like, that's what I think about when I think about the bubble. Like, it definitely was a cool time. It was a fucking weird time. It is hard to place it with everything else, like every other postseason we see, just because of how unique it was. You know what I mean? You literally got put on this like alternate universe almost, where it's like, okay, no fans, we're just gonna hoop. But also, you know, we had what, 3 months off, was it? 2 or 3 months off at least. So that's a tough part for me, just because, you know, I think if 2020 plays out, I really do think we get a Lakers-Clippers conference finals, and, you know, whatever happens there happens. You know, we saw Denver come back from dual 3-1 deficits, which I don't know if that happens if you're going home and away like that. You know what I mean? The fact that you can stay on a, you know, on a site, like you said, similar to AAU, I think that makes it a bit different. You know what I mean? You don't have a home court at all. So it was completely different. It is underrated, but it's so... Some of the stats that were happening and some of the events that were happening in general at the bubble, it's so different from what happens in everyday NBA life. It really was like an alternate universe. So it really was you fucking took a video game and was just like, oh, here's this situation. What happens here? And underrated, undervalued, possibly. But I don't think we take into account how just unique that all was. And like, even still, like last few days I've seen clips of the bubble, like I'll just see like random highlights and I'm like I still can't believe like that actually happened. I'm like, goddamn, it seems so soulless there, but at the same time, like we said, as it was happening, it's got very much a pickup feel because it's just 10 players in a gym hooping. So it was dope in some forms, but I'm so glad we were way past that. We're way past the empty arenas. I'm glad to where we are now.
Oh, I am too. I mean, I like the fact that we can go to games, see things, but I liked it just because you got no home court advantage. How are these players going to play?
More pure.
Like, just it's like what's going to happen. That's why I thought it was cool. Yes. And that's why I think it's a little underrated and undervalued, just how pure and how... like great the game is. Like, there was no crowds involvement, there was no, it was just the best players in the world going out on the court playing basketball. That's why I thought it was cool. So
for sure.
But I'd say other than that, that's my last point that I have.
Listen, we will be back this weekend to recap whatever happens in these series. Obviously if anything crazy happens, we will be back to review that as well. But Keenan, great talking to you. Like, subscribe, follow Warner Brothers Podcast, YouTube.
I'll be a new age. That's by true. The time yeah, we're
you
back.
Will be. You will, but you'll be 26. Like, subscribe, follow YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
I'll be old.
Keenan, great talking to you. We will be back this weekend. Peace.